This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It's World Wide Wave time, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And a big thank you to the gang from Generation Next. Tonight we're venturing to China. Everything about China is big. Its landmass, its economy, its population. In the 1 hour that we are doing this radio show, nearly 2,000 new Chinese children will be born. Ignoring Kinsey's theory that 10% of the world is gay, even if just 2% of China's population was gay, lesbian, transgender, or bisexual, the number would still easily eclipse the entire population of Australia. Tonight we're speaking with Benjamin Law, comedian, columnist and author and self-confessed Gaysian. Yes, his book Gaysia, Adventures in the Queer East. Something to think about tonight. How is same-sex marriage in China different to other countries? How does a gay community of millions remain virtually hidden? Is China's LGBT community actually starting to find its voice? We'll find out all those things in the course of tonight. Of course, we love hearing from you and interacting with you. You can send us an SMS on 0427 JOY 949. Email us in the studio, that's onair@joy.org.au. Call Fernando on the front desk on 1300 JOY 949. And we're live on Facebook. Search World Wide Wave on Facebook and send us a message. But as always, it's time to start with a song. And this is KT Tunstall, Hold On, a Scottish singer whose mother was half Chinese. You say I need more than my fair. It's a World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. And it's a show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we're starting off in China, actually the People's Republic of China, technically. The traditional term for homosexuality includes the passion of the cut sleeve and the bitten peach. Other terms include the male trend and the allied brothers. In fact, in Chinese language, and I'll do my best here, homosexual is tongxingliang, or same-sex love or relations. Homosexual sodomy was banned in the People's Republic of China from at least the 20th century, until it was legalised in 1997. The existence of homosexuality has been well documented. There's a lot of discussion over how the extent of homosexuality. However, it's fairly well appreciated that there were gay people around in China, and it wasn't until the Western countries came in that it became illegal. China recognises neither same-sex marriage nor civil unions. It's an interesting attitude that the Chinese government has towards homosexuality. It's called the three no's. The three no's is no approval, no disapproval, and no promotion. And we'll find out a bit more about that as we get into the show. The attitudes that it's almost don't ask, don't tell on a national scale. There is some support, though, for gay people. In fact, a poll in 2007 in Shanghai found 30% support for same-sex marriage. And this is in a country where being gay is quite invisible. A similar poll in Beijing a couple of years later found about 30% support. A lot of people who really didn't have an opinion because they really didn't have an understanding. So these signs of pending change. Recently, a government spokesman was asked about gay marriage, and he said that same-sex marriage was still too ahead of its time for China. He argued that same-sex marriage was not recognised by many Western countries, and therefore, being more liberal than China, that we should expect that it would not be here in the long run or in the near future. However, the Chinese government did just a couple of weeks ago invite openly lesbian Prime Minister of Iceland and her wife to an official state visit. The gay community was very excited by this, even though the official media coverage by the Chinese government gave absolutely no recognition to the Prime Minister's wife, who did come and participate in all the official functions as a dignitary's wife does. So small changes just starting to take effect in China. We're going to hear now from Ashanti. This is her song, What's Love? She is one quarter Chinese and an American singer-songwriter, producer and actress.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we're talking China. And we have on the line, I can call you a regular now, Ben, Benjamin Law, the author of Geisha Adventures in the Queer East. Welcome back.
Hey, Worldwide Wavers, how are you going?
We are sensational and very pleased to have you on the phone to talk tonight about China. Now, as a part of your book, you travelled around a whole lot of countries in Asia, one of which was China. Now, everything about China is big. When you arrived, did you get was that sense overpowering for you?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, out of all the countries that I travelled to, so for my book, I went to 7 different Asian countries. China was the country in which I spent the most time, and I think I planned that with a sense that this was, one, a really big country to tackle, and two, that it was going to be a complicated country to sort of tackle as well. So I landed in Beijing, and immediately, especially if you're an outsider, I mean, I'm ethnically Chinese myself. My dad was raised and born in the south of China, but I'd never been to the mainland before. And I touched down, and, you know, it's sort of an environment that in Beijing is quite unforgiving if you're a newcomer and an outsider. So I landed when it was a 40 degree Celsius day, huge heat wave, really sort of brutal. If you don't speak much Mandarin as well, no one's really going to help you out. You really have to keep in mind that Beijing especially is one of those cities that was closed off to a lot of the world for a very, very long time. So I think that idea of visitors coming in, they don't necessarily want to talk to you. They're not necessarily even that curious a lot of the times. But, of course, going in as a writer, I was very curious about them. The whole idea, I guess, of me going to China was to uncover hidden lives. What's it like to be young, queer in China, especially if you want to hook up online in a country where being online is fundamentally strange?
Now, you mentioned they're hidden, and this is a theme that comes through, the invisibility. I think you said it's like ghosts, something that doesn't even exist. How did you go about tracking down gay people to, well, not only tracking them down, but finding people who would be interested in, I guess, being immortalised in a book?
Yes. Well, the first thing I usually do is I meet up with people who do actually want to talk and just get a lay of the land. So one of the first people that I talked to was Sean, who was from a group there called Common Language, which was like a lesbian activist and welfare group. And she was interesting because she was probably maybe a generation older than me, Gen X. And she came of age in China when there wasn't really much of a vocabulary about what it was to be gay or lesbian or queer. And she remembered when the internet first came to China, in a way, even before it was www.protocol, which blows my mind. I didn't even know what the internet would have looked like back then. And she was explaining it. It was sort of like an old-style news group, in a way, where people would communicate through really primitive-type forums. And it was the first time, I mean, I think a lot of us, depending on our ages, can remember the first time we're on the internet. But back then, when everyone was still trying to figure out what the internet was, it wasn't this system in China like it is now. It was still very open. And she found people from overseas who identified as lesbians very, very quickly. And she got in touch with them that way. And since then in her work, you know, she's really done a lot of done a lot of campaigning, done a lot of network building about how gays in China can connect. So she was one of the first people that I spoke to, and from her I would speak to other people, my translator, one of my translators, Silvano, he was very active in the gay scene. So he would tell me interesting stories about people I should talk to, or and then from there you sort of build a broader network. I would talk to a guy who lived in California, I think, and he was Chinese himself, and he runs one of the biggest websites outside of China for Chinese-speaking and reading people within China about what it means to be gay. It's a huge education that's still going on because it is very hidden.
He basically answers questions for gay people about all sorts of gay issues and gives them advice and thoughts. He's fielding 60,000 questions, he reckons he's had. That's just phenomenal.
I know, and he's not paid for it. I think he really feels this very keen sense of duty and responsibility. And I think when you're sought out, I mean, this is a guy, Damien, and from a website called iBuy, and so many young Chinese people, that's their first encounter with the idea of what homosexuality or queer identity is. And secondly, that it might not be a medical disorder that they need to be cured of or anything like that. So, you know, he's Chinese himself, but as I said, he's also American. So he feels like he can be far more frank about these issues because he's been openly gay for such a long time himself. And it's really interesting because, like, there was one young guy that I spoke to, and he would put himself through different forms of therapy, got onto antidepressants and drugs that his doctor said might cure him of his homosexuality. And he'd known about this website that Damien was making for a while. He'd read all the questions and answers, but he wasn't sure who to believe. You know, so there's a lot of conflicting advice as well.
You mentioned Jeanne before, who's, I guess you would say, a prominent lesbian activist now. And I do recall one of the when you said she was starting to investigate her lesbianism, and she went to the library, and the only thing she could find was a book on an oral history of lesbian nuns or something completely peculiar. She works out of the LGB Centre, which is in Beijing. Describe that for us.
It's interesting, you know, because Beijing is and has been for such a long time a smoggy city. I think if you go there now, you know, you can get daily pollution readings about how toxic the air is on any given day, and it's visibly, you know, it's visibly toxic. It looks like a poisonous fog. And on the first day that I went to the LGBT centre in Beijing, I was like, wow, this building is ugly. There are a lot of really ugly grey utilitarian communist looking buildings in Beijing. And then you sort of look up and it's like, where am I supposed to be? Where is this centre? And then you look up and, of course, it's this giant rainbow coming through the grey. You can't get anything gayer. So I was like, okay, I'm definitely in the right place.
The beacon was shining.
Exactly. Out of this grey, sad-looking phallus, there was a ray of hope. But the thing about China, just as an aside, that's very interesting, is the rainbow occurs so often in their graphic design. Of course, it's used for kids, but even adults are very fond of rainbow paraphernalia. So you'd often see people in the streets just wearing huge rainbows, but it's not synonymous with queer identity there at all. But, you know, the LGBT centre in Beijing, of course, does use the international colours of queerness. And when I first arrived in Beijing, because I'd never been there before and this idea of being queer in China was so mysterious to me, I found it staggering that an LGBT centre existed in Beijing whatsoever. So that was one of my first stops. And from there, I mean, in order to answer your first question before about how I got stories, a lot of conversations took place from there that led me to other people that I wanted to speak to.
So what does the LGBT centre do? How does it help gay and lesbian people?
Well, in some senses, I mean, it's quite limited in its scope. It's a very lovely space, don't get me wrong. You know, it's got lovely, tasteful decor.
As one would expect, I mean.
Exactly. And people meet up there for singing classes. It's very much a community space. You know, it's not like they're doing any medical testing or anything there. It's not like they're really protesting much because it's China. You can't really protest. So the way that they tried to do things were through organising soft diplomacy or soft artistic campaigns. They would put together photographic exhibitions of people, you know, almost like an It Gets Better campaign, where they would talk about, where they would hold up signs with their life stories and stuff like that. And they were quite connected with the international community. They would go out there and, you know, make ties with the different embassies about putting on different events and stuff like that. But they were very quiet. It was much more younger crowd, I think, among a much more younger metropolitan and educated crowd. As I think often happens with different queer groups, you're going to get one particular demographic that's drawn to it. But they'd also reach out in other ways. I think they'd do stuff like either radio broadcasts or podcasts, and a lot of young people from hours away would listen to them and find their way to secretly come to the LGBT little meetings. So that was sort of great.
And this is all, the internet keeps coming up as a recurring theme, this sort of glue that binds the community. Yet China's reported to have some of the strictest internet censorship around the world. How does the message get out?
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things is it's really hard to know or hard to gauge the Chinese government's stance, if you will, on homosexuality on the internet. Now, from 1997, if I remember correctly, homosexuality is no longer a crime in mainland China. It used to be a crime under hooliganism laws, which is great. I love the idea that homosexuals are hooligans. but it's no longer an illegal act having same sex. And yet there's sort of a deep ambivalence and ambiguity about where it stands in terms of government policing websites. There have been quite a few queer websites shut down. And the thing is, if you're a website moderator and you get shut down in China, you're not exactly going to be provided with a reason as to why you've been shut down. So what tends to happen more is that the website moderators, for instance, they'll really self-censor themselves. One guy I spoke to, whose name was Jeff, he was starting up, I guess, the equivalent of gay Facebook for China. So in Chinese script, very much social networking, but dudes wanting to meet other dudes who are into dudes. And during dinner even, he would moderate his website tirelessly. And this is a website where thousands of people are joining up on a regular basis, and yet he's going through the profile and taking down inappropriate photos before the Chinese censors can get to him and take them down himself. So one of the criticisms or one of the observations that a lot of people have about Chinese government censorship, and it's not just with queer stuff, is that usually Chinese web moderators are moderating themselves far more than you'd expect what the Chinese censors would have to do themselves. So there's that sort of interesting tension and anxiety underlying a lot of gay websites and their creation.
I also remember there was something there about some creators of websites were looking at, if you like, tricks. They'd sort of have a very bland front page so that the automatic bots that scanned for certain keywords didn't pick up anything. You had to actually get the trust of the person running the website and then join the be invited to join the forum, which let you inside. You know, it's sort of a backdoor way of getting around things.
Yeah, and they often used that technique for porn websites. So what was really ingenious, I thought, and some people tried to show me what was going on, but I can't read Chinese, so I sort of...
It's all pictures if it's porn there.
Yeah, exactly. But what you have to do is you have to join up to a forum, and then you're provided passwords to get... It's almost like a video game, you know, next level, next level, next level, before you reach the golden jackpot.
The golden prize.
Exactly, which is just all dicks. And I just thought that was ingenious, because if you're... I mean, one of the ways that the Chinese government censors the internet is actually just using people pretending they're other people, pretending they're normal Chinese internet citizens. And if you're someone who's just trying to scan the internet to see if anything was dodgy there, you're not going to go to the effort to make a membership, and you're not going to get all those keys and passwords to get to the, you know, the golden dicks at the end of the tunnel. So everyone works around it in their own way.
The voice you're hearing is Benjamin Law, the author of Geysia, Adventures in the Queer East. If you've got a question for Benjamin, send us an SMS on 0427JOY949. Email us in the studio, that's onair@joy.org.au. Phone us 1300JOY949 or contact us live on Facebook. Just search World Wide Wave.
Follow LGBT International News and Current Affairs.
Like us on Facebook at W3Joy or visit us at W3Joy.org.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
It's a World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, where tonight we're joined by Benjamin Law, author of Geysia, Adventures in the Queer East. We were talking a bit about family there, Ben. It seems the Chinese culture, there's really no option to step away from your family. It's so intrinsically linked. So when somebody does come out, how does that sit with their family?
I mean, this is the thing about China, right? I mean, family's so central to, I think, most cultures, most communities. But I think in China, that sense of belonging to your family is compounded for several reasons, for cultural reasons, but also the fact that there's a one-child policy as well. So if you are the child of parents, you are this very, very strong unit. And this issue plays out, interestingly, in a few ways. For instance, Xian, the lesbian activist from Common Language, who I mentioned before, she was talking to me about a case where a young woman had come out to her parents as being gay, and her parents freaked. They were really not happy. They lived outside of the city, and what they did was they followed their daughter back to her apartment and forced her female lover out of the apartment, and basically gave their daughter a deadline about when she had to basically divorce all ties from this lover of hers and when to get a husband as well. So there are those sort of ultimatums made. And in those situations, I think a lot of people who are outside of the Chinese culture would look at that and say, well, why wouldn't you just, you know, get the police
walk
involved?
Walk away, yeah,
why,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you walk away from your parents? Why wouldn't you just turn your back on them? And if you speak to a lot of Chinese people, they'll tell you about this idea where it's almost like you'd be cutting off a limb to be saying no to your family. You know, if family is so intrinsically a part of you, you can't separate yourself from them. And often in those situations, what's hard for people who might be on phone counselling lines or from queer groups, support groups, is they can't, they understand that they can't necessarily say, well, turn your back on your family. It's often just not a Chinese thing you can do. And in other situations, because on top of that, you're the only child, so you're expected to marry and to have children. Because, I mean, China's not a country where there's a strong sort of social welfare policy. Your children,
they're the ones that look after you when you're getting old, basically.
That's right. That's right. They represent a pension policy, if you will. So the idea that if you don't get married and have children yourself, that sort of buying is the idea that you will not take care of your parents or that your parents won't be taken care of.
Wow, that's some guilt trip, isn't it?
It's a huge guilt trip. And I spoke to several people who told me that it's quite a common experience that if you're young and you know you're queer and you want to come out to your parents, that you actually come out to them and they'll be appalled and they'll be shocked and they'll say, okay, so you're attracted to people of the same sex, but you're still going to get married, aren't you, and have children. So basically, the subtext is you are going to live a lie though, right? That's the only thing you can do. And a lot of people do end up choosing that in some way or another.
So families would prefer their, let's say, gay son to marry a woman, even if it's maybe a lesbian woman, rather than being gay or, I guess, being single, I guess, in the same vein.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because, I mean, I think for many, many people in China, the idea of marriage is a romantic construct, but I think there's also this idea of marriage as a very practical thing to do. It's to continue generations, to broaden out the family network as well. So for a lot of families, I don't think there's much romance attached to the idea. You get married because that comes hand in hand with being a functioning adult in China. And then, I mean, when we talk about this idea of gay marriage, I mean, this is something that I found quite fascinating, because when I went to China, I thought my chapter was going to be about how people connected on the internet in a country where the internet is strange. And as I dug into that more, I realized that one of the ways that people connected on the internet in China was through the classified section, where gay men, gay women would actually look for each other to marry.
So this is same-sex marriage in the most literal sense. Two people of the same sex. A marriage of convenience. Now,
it's
these
the
websites.
Marriage you can imagine.
They'd really be fabulous weddings, wouldn't they?
Exactly. Well, there were a few people who told me that there were, they could go hideously wrong as well. So if the bride, who was a lesbian, and the groom, who was a gay man, actually invited friends who knew both of these people's real identities, there was one wedding someone told me about where the bride and the groom's guest got really, really drunk and thought it was the most hilarious thing they ever saw. Where meanwhile, the rest of the wedding party, they think this is a legitimate wedding. They have no idea why these people are getting so raucous and wild and drunk and pissing themselves laughing, because it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. So there is this whole, there are whole sections of these websites dedicated to men looking for women to marry in front of their partners, and there's almost a sliding scale of what they expect from each other. Some people just want the ceremony to please their parents who live out in the countryside, and then they'll never see this married couple probably ever again unless they visit on the holidays or something. So they just want that sham marriage to make sure their parents feel happy. Other people want that legal documentation to prove to their parents that they are actually married and all that sort of stuff. And because marriage is so much hand-in-hand with property ownership in China, or living together, some lesbians, some gay men will say in their terms and conditions that they actually want to cohabitate, that we must live together, or at least own assets together. And then
the terms and conditions, it's so legalistic, isn't it? I do remember actually one other story you had there where a gay and a lesbian a couple got together. They had two separate weddings, one in each city for each of the parents, and so that the parents would never meet.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
right.
That's a lot of effort to go to.
Yeah. I mean, but it's almost the premise of a really bad sitcom, probably a bad sitcom that I would watch. these people are getting married and they've got their real same-sex partners at the wedding ceremony, and often they might be posing as a couple themselves. And then at the end of the night at the hotel, covertly in the hotel hallways, they swap their partners for their real ones.
It's freaky. Now, there is another side of this, though, where gay men marry straight women. So I guess the avoidance thing. And the numbers, there's estimates of somewhere between 10 and 25 million of these weddings that go ahead, whereby I guess unwittingly the straight woman is left high and dry in some degrees, and that ends in various ways, be it divorce, be it just living a quiet life. But there's not much support there for the woman, is there?
And I think this phenomenon, when we talk about it, we also have to remember that, one, this still happens in so many countries, including Australia, men living a lie, essentially. And generations ago, it was probably what a whole lot of gay men did, because there was no support or community or no way or option they'd ever be able to come out and pursue romance and relationships with men. So they'd get married. This is happening in China so much that there have been hotlines established, especially for the women, who the literal translation is homo wives.
Homo wives.
Homo wives, tongxi, I think, is the name for them. And there have been stories written about them in Chinese women's magazines, and there's a number they can call. That's not manned full-time, but there's enough women calling that, the hotlines aren't cheap either, and they'll have complete breakdowns over it. And one of the women I spoke to who organised the hotline, she was saying that, when you're the wife of a husband and the husband has cheated on you with another woman, you can almost have that frank conversation with your family and friends about what happened. But if your husband has cheated on you with another man or has come out and said that he's gay, in a country like China especially, how do you even start having that conversation? So for many of them, the first time they call the hotline is the first time they've ever told anyone.
And probably the first time somebody's known what questions to ask as well.
Exactly, exactly. Because where else can you? What other forum is there for it? And this is one of the things about China. I mean, you know, it could be argued that China is a country without violent, aggressive homophobia, the homophobia that we know, which is the hatred of homosexuals and homosexuality and queerness. In China, there's a different problem altogether, you could argue, in that they don't have homophobia as we know it, but they just have this complete absence and complete silence, that sort of ghost-like aspect you were talking about before.
It's the shame, if you like.
Yeah, I think it's the shame of thinking that you're the only one, the only one, to the extent that you don't even really necessarily have a name for your feelings. And that, you know, it's such a crippling, it must be such a crippling thing to feel something and not even have a way of describing what's going on in your head and your heart. I think that's really, really sad.
Now, your book, it's Gaysia Adventures in the Queer East. It took you all over Asia and I guess you saw some of the best and some of the worst of what gay people are living. What effect has that had on you personally?
Well, I mean, I'm always wary of making comparison between my life and theirs, but at the same time, I do have to say I feel very lucky. You know, there's no country in the world where you go to and say this is a safe haven for queer people. This is where they've gotten it right. This is, you know, the promised land for the poofs or anything like that. every country isn't quite there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think every country isn't quite there on different scales, but also in different cultural contexts as well. Like I was saying, we don't have the silence that China has. That's very, very culturally specific to a lot of Asian countries. You know, Australia is a country where marriage rates are going down. So I think that pressure to marry is decreasing for everyone. I don't think it's that unusual not to marry anymore. So, but at the same time, yeah, you do come back from places, especially countries like, you know, I remember towards my final weeks in China, I would hear stories of people who'd place themselves through intense electroshock therapy. Damien, the guy who gives advice through his website called iBuy, was telling me a story of a young gay guy in China who was so heavily medicated for his homosexuality, just given so many antidepressants and antipsychotic medications, that he was physically crippled and sort of mentally disabled by it as well. And you're like, wow, these people are my same age, and so much of our circumstances depends on where we're born and when.
And we are so lucky here in Australia. The book is a great read, a lot of humour in it, and I guess one of the good things for me, I read it when it first came out, and doing this show I had to go and read it again, enjoyed it as much the second time. Benjamin Law, thank you very much for being a part of our show again tonight.
Thanks so much. It's always really, really fun. Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy. And lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, you're on the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we are stopping off in China. That was Ne-Yo, a Grammy Award-winning American R&B artist and producer who is one-quarter Chinese. His mother is of African-American and Chinese descent. We've been speaking tonight with Benjamin Law, author of the book Gaysia, Adventures in the Middle East, in the Queer East. I think I said that last show. And there's probably a few things about China that we didn't get a chance to go through. Workplace laws, there's really no sort of applicable support against discrimination in the workplace for LGBT people. There is specific mention of anti-discrimination policies around ethnicity and gender and religion, but nothing as yet for sexuality. Transgender people face a very serious level of harassment. They really aren't catered for in any way in society. They're deemed as outsiders. Particular difficulties in the area of employment and gender reassignment surgery, and HIV, also a lot of difficulty for people in accessing both information and treatment. So still lots and lots of challenges going on in China. Time for one of China's biggest pop music acts. This is She with Atomic.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
And that brings us to the end of the Worldwide Way, where we've been in China. And a big thank you to Benjamin Law, author of the book Geisha Adventures in the Queer East. You can find that at all good and all gay bookstores. You can also follow Ben on Twitter. That's at Mr. Benjamin Law on Twitter. Thank you also to Fernando at the front desk for looking after us tonight. Next week, we have a great and a bit of an intense show. It's Uganda, one of the hotspots of the world. We'll be speaking to the directors of a film called Call Me Kutchu. It was a sellout in the Melbourne Queer Film Festival about the murder of activist David Kato, and also a very brave transgender activist and project worker in Uganda named Cleo. So stay tuned, 8 o'clock next week. Making room now for the boys in the locker room. It's the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.